Good morning, everyone. My name is Bria, and welcome to the Alberta School of Business Consumer Pod Index.
So today I'm joined by Chris Worrell and Heather Thompson. Chris is an MBA graduate and the CEO and co-founder of Uproot Collective. Heather is the executive director of the School of Retailing here at the university. So thank you guys both for joining me today. Feel free to jump in at any point during the conversation, but Heather, I thought we can start with you. There have been some changes to consumer behavior over the past 18 months, driven in part by the current public health crisis and the economic downturn. Can you speak to the current consumer landscape in Canada and perhaps what is driving our behavior?
I think everyone for the last 2 years since the pandemic started is that the change that we saw was the change that was going to happen anyways. It was just happening a lot faster. And I think as a consumer, we've always had this luxury of choice. We no longer were beholden to what was in our local community in terms of consuming goods or services. And so that was already shifting. Then when the pandemic happened and we had to shift to consuming things online, it changed everything. A recent stat I just heard was that before the pandemic, about 55% of boomers were doing the majority of their shopping online. And now it's something like 83% of boomers, so that's anyone born between 1946 and 1964, are doing shopping online. So this is a fundamental shift in how we consume goods and services. I think the cool thing is that it's allowing for the really innovative retailers to do well. And as a consumer, this just benefits us. And I think there's a little bit of a misconception that, okay, we're all shopping online now. The physical brick and mortar is dying. It's actually not the case. Brick and mortar is growing. It's doing well. I think when we saw the first wave of restrictions ease and we saw the lineups at HomeSense and Chapters, it just goes to show that we're social creatures. We still like to get out and do some shopping, whether it's recreational or otherwise. So I think the biggest shift is that we have more choice as a consumer. And we're seeing the stale distribution-based retailers leave the market. And I actually don't think that that is necessarily a bad thing.
Chris, do you have anything to add from your perspective?
Yeah, I agree. I think from our take, we just see it was an acceleration of the e-commerce. And I know for our business, we had always intended to do one and put one in place. But it forced us kind of into that position to make ours right away and to really focus on it. And I don't think it's where their customers are just going to stop buying online. I think there's been some fundamental shifts. And with the e-com, there's other aspects of the business or of the consumer marketplace that have come out that are in benefit or benefit consumers. So it's hard for that to all reverse.
So with that being said, Chris, Uproot, when you first came on the scene, it was a major disruptor in Edmonton. What has been the consumer appetite for your e-commerce platform like Uproot? As a marketplace for brands and entrepreneurs, can you speak to its growth since its launch, where it's going?
Yeah, it's been phenomenal. And maybe just even stepping back a little bit for those who might not know Uproot, but really what we are is a platform to acquire and grow emerging brands, food brands. And so we have everything from the manufacturing, the production, the distribution, all of that kind of capability to now the direct to consumer side. And actually before the pandemic hit, we were actually really focused on more the wholesale side and getting into the existing retailers. And we had really invested all of our infrastructure in putting HACCP food safety programs and building capacity and all of that. And like I said, we had always had this idea for e-com, and I think South Island Pies, one of our brands, had a small kind of online piece to it. But when the pandemic hit, it actually, like, retail froze bringing in new products. And at that point in time, we had really invested heavy to, like, build that increasing infrastructure. And so we were burning money on a monthly basis, and it was life or death for us at that point to change or die. We had soft launched a little store because we had always seen, like, and realized that there wasn't this, like, besides just the e-com piece, but there wasn't really this store that focused on kind of premium, local, amazing products with like founder stories and all of that. And so we were already going down that path, and then we were able to flip it online. And in about 24 hours, once kind of the lockdown happened, and then it just blew up overnight. Like, we were seeing, it was the entrepreneur's dream, where you were going through like 100-150% growth week over week kind of thing. And really, we went from not having a direct to consumer channel to doing, I think this year will be right around, or trailing 12 months is right around like 1.7 million. So it, the growth was explosive. And if you want validation for a marketplace for it, or is there a market for it, that those numbers are it. And not just on the consumer side, but the vendor side as well. And so when we first started, when we soft launched our store back in January before the pandemic, we had, I think we had like two or three other brands in our store. And as soon as we flipped online, we started reaching out to all these other vendors. And we had, obviously, having Honest Dumplings and South Island Pies and Natural Kitchen Delights, we were in the farmers markets in the scene. We knew a lot of food companies. So we started to reach out to them to get them in. Everybody at that time had lost all their kind of, like, farmers markets really declined in sales. Shows were canceled. So everybody was really looking for a way to sell their goods. And we were reaching out and brought in maybe 30, 40 brands pretty quick in about a month or month and a half. And then now it's really shifted, and it's shifted to the point that now we have a lineup of 30 or 40 companies to come into Uproot at any time. So there's absolutely both the need from the vendor side and the consumer side. And I think that where I kind of mentioned earlier about the other benefits that come from this to consumers and both to vendors is that the existing retail channel is kind of the way the infrastructure set up. It's very difficult to bring in like seasonal flavors, limited editions, to have fluidity and SKUs and all of that kind of stuff. And e-commerce allows that. So our customers really are able to get the best innovation and the best of new products. Mm-hmm. And then we're able to take the risk on new things, because you don't have to find a spot on a shelf for it. You can just put it in the back and sell it through the e-com. And it allows that greater flexibility, I think, for the vendor and for the e-com and the consumers benefit from that as a result.
And you also have a brick and mortar store, correct, downtown Edmonton?
Yeah, so we have kind of the omni-channel solution. So at our current facility here, you can do pickups or you can go shop as well. During the early days of the pandemic, we shut it down. Like, we didn't make it available for consumers, because we were like, that was right in the middle of like the lockdowns kind of thing in the early days. But now we have all of the risk mitigation kind of measures in place to have it open.
So Heather, you're very familiar with helping businesses shift and pivot. Do you think that, like Chris was saying, there's a consumer desire that's driving the need for companies to create a digital presence?
Sorry, it's not even a desire, it's a necessity at this point. You can't really be in business without a digital presence. A couple of years ago, I would have said, if you have a phenomenal physical experience, you should be okay. And that's true to a certain point, but I would really recommend businesses, whether you are a dentist, a restaurant, a bookstore, that you have some sort of digital presence. And Chris used the word omni-channel. And I think that's just running a business now. I wonder if in a couple of years we're going to use the term omni-channel, or it's not binary anymore. And I think it's interesting to see that that is 100% consumer driven. And businesses have to adapt to it. And if they're not prepared to adapt, they will go out of business. And so where we came up with making Edmonton digital, it was a partnership with the City of Edmonton, and we used a little bit of support from Digital Main Street. And so the students were tasked with helping businesses that signed up for this free program to build some sort of digital presence. And the intention was to help these businesses that are really good at what they do, whether they're a restaurateur, a cook, a baker, a lawyer, whatever they are, they're good at what their craft, and we would build them some sort of digital presence. So web commerce site, social media, an Etsy account, Pinterest account, whatever that looked like, on how best we could promote their business. and I think the bottom line, and hopefully this doesn't sound too crass, was just for them to make more money. It came out of need, and that was kind of our response from the pandemic, and businesses were shutting their doors down. And then we saw this really, really hit hard in January after another lockdown after the holidays. January is already a tough month for most retailers and most businesses, in fact. And then we just saw a lot of businesses not reopen their doors. So our students were hoping to just provide more access points to the business so they can survive these different, I guess, variables that are being thrown at them. But I cannot stress this enough. If you have a business and you don't have a digital presence, even a Google profile, I don't think you're gonna survive.
Chris, maybe you have, you can offer your perspective on this as well, but what are some specific ways that businesses can capitalize? You mentioned a Google profile on the digital acceleration that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think for sure you have to have social media, you have to have Google, you have to have a basic website. Like, all of those things are part of it today, and that customers are doing the research and wanting to know the story. I think you have to be able to communicate your story and your brand values and all of that in today's world. You need that purpose piece. I think within the food industry, it's particularly challenging because of the as well the infrastructure that's often required. So it's hard for And this is where Uproot comes in, I guess, is it's hard for someone who, say, is a frozen product to do a direct-to-consumer channel because you have that frozen product, and then how do you ship it and how do you deliver it and how do you get it to the door? You can't just use regular mail, or if you're trying to, you're using dry ice and you're putting it in a box and it's costing you $30 to ship something, and just the cost of shipping is prohibitive in that way. So that's where really Uproot is trying to change this, is that we're managing all that infrastructure and all of that, and we see ourselves evolving into this like Amazon type platform where a company can then come into us, similar to like setting up on Etsy. You set up an Uproot, and then you have the ability to like grow your brand within our channel, and with that you get all of that distribution, you get all of those kind of pieces taken care of for you, because I think the food industry in particular has that added difficulty, and even for us, like we now have, like, I think we can reach 85% of the population of Alberta. We hit everywhere from Grand Prairie to Medicine Hat. And all of that's done with like frozen reefer vans. And if it was just selling just dumplings or just pies or just the chocolate, like, it wouldn't work just economically. And so I think you have to have a digital presence, but I think we're going to see more and more of these type of consolidation plays to help bring that, that leverage of economies of scale together.
So, I mean, we've spoken about this already, but it really seems like there is a prioritization or a shift to local, small products over kind of these larger superstore type brands. Heather, is there any truth to that trend? Do you think that trend will continue as we move out of the pandemic?
Absolutely. I think that was like the best silver lining of the pandemic, is this focus on supporting local. And I think it's kind of like when there's like a big snowstorm, everybody gets together, we shovel out and we have enthusiasm. But when you get the seventh snowstorm, that enthusiasm starts to wane a little bit. And I think we started to see that a little bit with Shop Local. But there was enough momentum that I think people built some pretty cool habits about supporting their local economy. If not, they at least understand the importance of keeping the money in your local community, and how much stays within the local community versus supporting especially like an American retailer or something like that. The other thing that we're seeing that's, I think, top of mind right now, and forgive me because I've just been talking about it, I feel like, for 3 weeks, is the supply chain crunch. This will be really interesting. Happy to get Chris's perspective on what's next for the supply chain, but This could create quite a bit of a pickle, not just for the holiday season, but well into 2022. And supporting local is going to be even more important. And now it was always about, I think, benefiting both consumer and business owner with the Shop Local. Now I think it's going to really, really benefit the consumer, because a couple of things. One, they have a little bit more of a accurate inventory system because they can control more variables. It also won't be as expensive because they don't have to worry about all of the different costs associated with getting product from overseas to Canada. I had just heard that, you know, typically a shipping container will range you anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 if you're a company. Some companies are paying $20,000 right now for a shipping container. And so we're seeing this perfect storm. We've got the economy restarting. We have a labor shortage. And we have this big companies paying lots of money and creating a run on products. So they're hoarding. So you've got the big companies that can afford it are hoarding the products, whereas the small to medium-sized businesses can't play ball. And I've heard of some businesses will get their Christmas stock in February. They were promised they were going to get it now. Nope. They're essentially their shipper has kind of tossed them overboard, excuse the pun, and has said, well, someone is paying me triple what you're paying me, and they just can't compete. And it's really unfortunate. The good news is that a lot of local retailers will actually have some inventory that they didn't move through over the last little while. So I think supporting your local economy is going to be very advantageous for the consumer. And I hope it stays. I think the nice thing is that we're learning. Oh, I didn't know that restaurant had that. Oh, I didn't know you guys did that. I didn't know you guys carried that. And I think we as consumers are happy to pay that premium if there is one. Sometimes there isn't. Sometimes, especially right now, it might even be cheaper to support local. So I think this is, I really just hope that we're not even going to see this as a trend, quote unquote, anymore. I think it's going to be, this is the normal. This is my default, because we're getting so good at figuring out what's in my backyard, how do I support them, and how do I just keep money in my economy?
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And when you look at the local food and the support for it, like we started in the farmers market 8 years ago, and I've never seen as much support for local food as we are now. And definitely it ebbs and flows, I'm sure, over time. And I think local isn't enough to be like your whole story and your whole brand and your whole future. You need to make sure that you are innovative, you're unique, you have strong value proposition, but local is higher priority on the value stack than it's ever been. And we for sure see that on the supply chain side. It's really interesting. Because most of our stuff isn't affected for like our ingredients and all of our vendors. Like, we haven't had any issue with them running out of stock or shorting us or anything yet. But we are seeing some price changes, like where some vendors are having to come in a little bit higher. Like meat, for example, the price of meat has just gone up phenomenally over the last year and a half.
Right.
So that's affecting people's prices. But it's also really interesting for someone like us, because we have the Honest Dumplings and the South Island Pies and the Natural Kitchen Delights, and we're in this really unique position right now from a supply chain and cost. Like we still do get packaging from overseas, and they're like, oh, they're sending out a notice and letting everybody know it's going to go up 5%.
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay, it's going to go up 5%. How does that affect us? Well, we finally got to scale where we can do rotogravure printing, which is like mass printing, and you buy 16,500 units of it, and those cost 19 cents. When a year ago, when we were buying packaging, we were doing digital print, and digital print costs like 80 cents a bag. So we're actually kind of still better now than we were a year ago. And even if all of our prices go up 10% or 15 or 20% over the next year or two or three or whatever that looks like, we're probably still ahead of the game on our cost of goods. And so we're actually in this bit of a sneak peek. We're actually going to be coming out in a few weeks from now or in December with actually some price adjustments on our Honest Dumplings, actually making it more affordable. And we've seen so much savings with our economies of scale and our better supply chain today than when we were smaller, that we're actually going to pass that on to customers. And instead of this whole world where everything's going up in cost, we're actually able to start driving some economies of scale and lower our price.
See? Support local.
And it's delicious.
And it's, well, that's, and I think, Chris, I think you're hitting on something that's so important, and I've got some flack for saying this before, but I have a bit of an issue with the shop local campaign when it comes from a place of nagging the consumer. Like, you have a responsibility to shop local, and it kind of gave the business owner a little bit of a pass to be innovative you can't berate people to shop local. You can't. But you need to give them a reason to shop local.
Yeah.
And I think you just hit the nail on the head. It's like, hey, I could be in New Zealand. It doesn't matter. My stuff is so good. It's just like, it's a huge benefit and like win-win that I am in your own backyard. Because like Bria said, it's delicious. So
yeah. And you know what, on that front, it's like, I've always like, cause I'm obviously I'm in the local food scene and our business has been able to put $1 million back in the companies since COVID started and all of that. And so obviously I care about this, but just as at a consumer level, even like me personally, it's like, I love supporting local, but I wouldn't buy an inferior product just because it's local.
Yes.
It has to be comparable or better. And I think that as much as you have this conversation around like local becoming more prominent, consumers aren't going to buy worse products that are local. They got to be comparable or better. And I think that's where, and if you look at Honest Dumplings and you look at its branding and its packaging and the story, or even Uproot, we rarely ever mention local, and we don't want to be pegged as local. We play the local card, but it's like what we think what we're doing is valuable enough and has enough innovation that it doesn't have to just ride on that local train. We can ride on our innovation. We can ride on our quality of product and then add in the stack, the local card.
I love it. I think that's a really, really great point. And I think even you're giving me a lot to think about right now, because I actually am wondering about that local element. And in a way, you never want to pigeonhole yourself. You don't want to be special just for this market, because that is cool for this market. And as a Canadian, probably to a certain point, but you're right. I think that it could be limiting if that's the big thing, but
I look at consumers, and like part of the story that we're telling now too is it's like we love when it's like we got a product from Calgary or from Vancouver or from Toronto, and we're adding more from like across Canada all the time. But it's like the local hidden gem of Calgary that all the Calgary people know and love, and they're all excited. Or there's this hidden gem in Edmonton that we all know. Like Ling Nan, like they have their dry spicy chicken. Like we got them to work. We worked with them to productize it and put it in Uproot. And it's like, that's an amazing product that can hold its own anywhere, but nobody knew about it other than people in Edmonton, cause it was in that local area. So it's like, now we are working to bring that amazing product well beyond Edmonton, so that the hidden gem in Edmonton can make it into Calgary and vice versa. So it's about taking those exceptional products and everything in Uproot. Like we try and we hold a high standard, because we don't want local that isn't that standard. And that's our brand. And our customers, like when a customer doesn't like something, like we refund it, and it costs us money. And so if you got an inferior local product, we don't want it.
I completely couldn't say it better myself.
What about convenience? Yes, when we buy product locally, it has to be just as good, if not better. But I also think it has to be convenient for consumers to shop these products. And I think you're doing that, Chris, with your e-commerce platform. Can you speak to maybe that aspect of it?
Yeah. And that's where like another piece of this, where it's like, oh, consumers aren't going to go back, is that to get, if you put in the right order at Uproot, like if you went and said, I'm going to get these probably 10 or 15 items, you might have had to go to like 6 farmers markets, 3 different grocery stores, and then maybe direct to a couple stores to get those products. And so by us bringing that together and consolidating, it's convenient to support local. It's convenient and easy to do it. And you can click through the buttons, you can do a pickup, or you can get it delivered. And convenience is in terms of delivery is relative. Like we're in Edmonton right now, you get your order probably within 1 or 2 days. In Calgary, you get it every Thursday, Friday. As we get more volume, then we want it to be even more convenient, say in Calgary. But somewhere like Grand Prairie, like they get a delivery once a month. And so to people in Calgary who don't even have access to it, it's convenient to get it once a month. And I think the way we've structured the model isn't the same level of service or convenience across the board for everyone. But in terms of like product and offering as well, like some of our products, it's like, oh, it's convenient, it's microwave, and that's all you do, and it's easy. Others are like more like a kit, then you got to make it and do it. And obviously you get different kind of segments and different customers wanting different kind of things from the products that we carry.
So something that I wanted to touch on before we wrap up here that I thought was super interesting is that I read, Chris, that you have a new partnership with the Edmonton Airport to create a space that will allow to kind of scale up production with some of these small scale food entrepreneurs. Can you speak to this initiative and maybe what does something like this mean for the food industry?
Yeah, I think if we can carry out our vision, I think we see the full kind of transformation or disrupting this whole way food companies commercialize. And right now the way it works is like all kind of tech companies or anything, there's this valley of death, and you probably start in the farmer's market in the food industry, you make some money. It's probably the only time you're making money. As soon as you get into retail, you got a facility, equipment, staff, marketing budget, and you start losing money, and then you need a food safety program, and then you got to do listing fees to get in the grocers, and you get a distributor, you give up more margin, all these kind of things. And it just all of this in the food industry, you're really small, or you're the unicorn success story, or you're like the 89% of food products that fail. That's the reality of the industry. And so what we said is there an alternative way to do this? Can we have those systems, processes, capability to be able to take emerging brand with a great founder story and premium quality product and then help it scale and grow and commercialize it? And so Uproot Food Store is really our front seat at the door to say, hey, look at all these amazing products. Let's find the winners, the best ones, the ones that consumers love and want. And then we can then work further with them. And ideally, our goal, we are looking to build the next kind of Nestle or Kraft type food conglomerate down the road. And to do that, you need this house of brands, this house of products. But we want to do it with and while maintaining the quality and authentic stories and the purpose of all of these brands. Further to that is we now have the ability and with this facility at EIA and its CFIA capability is we'll be able to take what's happening locally here and locally elsewhere and then rapidly scale it nationally. And so all of that, whether it's a peer acquisition or it's a co-packing or other services that we can offer, all of that will vary to I guess on the company and the opportunity. But I think we have this ability. What we're creating is this new way so that consumers will ultimately benefit with greater variety, mm-hmm. better food safety, better quality, more innovation. And we're trying to take, how do you get that Lingnan that now we got to Alberta, how do we take that nationally? And that's what we want to do. And that's what really this next facility is about.
So I guess lastly, I mean, it's near impossible to predict the future, but what consumer trends do we think will continue as we kind of move out of this pandemic? Using the word trend lightly, Heather.
Yeah, that's right. Digital.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, I think Chris just also said something that's really quite interesting about this, like, convenience. And I that word is a bit of a tricky one, but I don't know if that's a trend. But as consumers, I think we've become quite the picky pair. Like we are a bit spoiled now. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, as a consumer, it's great because the market has to respond to this if they want to remain competitive and in business. And so I think as a consumer, we want it to be convenient. We want it to be special. We want it to be personalized. We want everything. We want it to look good. And I think Chris's actually digital platform is a really good example of this because it looks really good. It's super simple. It's quick. It's effective. And that's, I expect no less as a consumer. I'm like, this should be it. Otherwise, I'm going to exit out and go somewhere else. And so in terms of what's next, I think it's a tall order for businesses to remain competitive. But I think that there's a lot of money to be made. And I think that as a consumer, we're just going to benefit from that. I'm so excited to see what's going to take place in the next 3 to 5 years and beyond. I know it's been a lot of doom and gloom and businesses. It's been hard hit by the pandemic and it certainly has. Mm-hmm. But I do think from this, we are going to start to see some cool innovation that we haven't even seen yet. And especially as we get into AI and data, and as we move into the technology that, especially in Canada, even North America, we just can't appreciate what's coming at us. All you have to do is look at China and what they're up to. And it's like overwhelming, it's exciting, it's kind of scary. All the things that they're working on to make us spend our money even more effectively. So I think it's an exciting time. And I think that's what we can look forward to, is just more convenience, better products, and just having a better selection of where we want to spend our money.
Yeah, I love that. And I think the pickiness piece is something that really resonates with me, because I think it's rather than from us, from a, like a, looking at as consumers being picky, it's like which is one and the same, but it's that specialization or that design for them. And I think when we look at, say, like Netflix, and how that changed the movie industry, and that they can go down a hyper localized segment and produce content because they're big enough and they have this platform that they can develop content for one specific group within their audience, that audience gets a better experience and gets a product that's custom tailored for them. That's where we see things going, and that's where Uproot is really trying to drive, is taking the data, taking the analytics, looking at our consumers, what do they want, predicting that, making limited edition runs or making things, products that are specifically tailored to those specializations. And so we don't have to make something the way the grocery industry is designed, where you commoditize it, you make it for everyone, you take out all the flavor, you do whatever you have to do to get the price point down so yes, everybody will buy it. Yes. We don't have to do that. We can make a perfect product for a specific segment and then target them and make profit on that. And the consumer ultimately wins out because they're getting a better experience.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Do we have time for another podcast? Because yes, if I can make a bumper sticker or tattoo the picture, it would be, do not be everything for everyone. It's a race to the bottom. And when you build your model on that, it's not going to work, right? Like, you're not Tylenol, and you can't be everything to everyone. And there's going to be, well, Tylenol has to be everything to everyone, but I think you hit the nail on the head. You're going to have a better product because you're allowed to be more specialized, and that specialized product, even though you started off with like a certain idea of who your consumer would be, it expands and it's a domino effect. And I can't stress that enough. Like, you cannot be everything to everyone. I guess there's thesis of the podcast.
That's anything else. We can carry on as long as you guys want, but is there anything else that you want to discuss or bring up?
Yeah, I guess I'm just excited about the future. I think there's so much opportunity, and I think what the fast tracking to digitization and to e-commerce is really going to change the game in the way, mm-hmm. like, I think consumers will benefit by better product and more tailored, and like, I'm excited by it all. And I think our opportunity is massive as we scale and grow, and it's all thanks to customers supporting us this entire time. And for us, we were able to take our Honest Dumplings following and South Island Pie following and drive them in the Uproot and then expose them to this other world of all these amazing products. And I think we as much as our consumers are jazzed and excited about the future, and like, we all of us here, like, we get to try the products before anybody else does, and I can tell you it's exciting times. And I think food innovation, there's no shortage of it, and it's just a matter of how do we connect it and scale it and make it more accessible and convenient for customers to get.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting, Chris, as you're saying this, I think it'd be a cool, and not to, like, you're busy and it, not to make work, but take it or leave it. But I think it would be actually quite cool to hear or even see, like, top five failures from Chris, because I think it's an important dialogue around how you have tried something and you just failed faster. Because I think what we're seeing as a consumer is like, wow, look how successful it is. Your sites are really good. It's quick. You're doing this, you're doing that. But what's not seeing is, it's kind of like that swan, right, on the top of the water, isn't it? The demented tree. I think, I guess that's, and I'm not an entrepreneur in that way. And I think that's something that people just don't completely appreciate, just how your day is not a 9-to-5, right? Like especially over the last year and a half, 2 years, you're like, okay, I'm doing this. And everyone in the world, the government was like, no, you're not. Pivot, change, do something different.
We definitely got some scars over the last year and a half. And like, even just from when we first launched the e-com, when the lockdown first happened, like everybody, like there were still flus, right? Like normal flus and colds. And like, we were like, just the amount of staff we had, and it was interesting because everybody, including ourselves, like you have this anxiety of society and what's happening and all this. And then my business is just exploding and I'm like, well, this is amazing. And like, right. It's like, you're just in this dichotomy. And then I have a couple young kids and I'm working like 13, 14, 15, 16 hour days. Cause I don't have any staff because the staff that everybody's working from home cause they're sick or they're not working from home cause we're a manufacturer. They're just not here. So we're worrying about stocking out of product. And we're like, I'm packing orders, fulfilling orders. We don't have any systems, any processes. We were on the wrong e-commerce platform. And we ended up having to flip it all like 6 months in, and the difficulties of that. There's just a million things to even managing cash flow with this kind of growth. We've been lucky. All of our vendors in the community that we're in have been very supportive, but like, we have had late payments and that's happened. We're finally really only in the last 6 months are we actually profitable for the first time. So there's the stress and anxiety and the stories for sure. There's a million. I don't know if I could find only six.
But I think that is the actual other podcast, because I think, and I appreciate your honesty, because this is what people need to hear, especially even like our students, right? Like this is a really cool, honest insight into the world of an entrepreneur. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think, and to piggyback, I would agree with Chris. I'm excited for the future. I've already said that. And so I think it's going to be fun. A quick little plug is that our students are not done with helping businesses get a digital platform. So stay tuned for more on that. Some exciting updates coming to help more local businesses.
Yeah, and if you guys are doing something like that too, like we would love to give you any input from our experience over the last year and a half too, and share like some of the apps and the tools and the stuff that we use. Like we're now on the Shopify platform, which is amazing.
Love Shopify, yes.
And we know it inside and out, and which apps and that kind of thing. Would more than happy to share kind of our best practices with your students and the companies you're working with, for sure.
For sure, I will be taking you up on that, so I appreciate it.
I love it, you guys. Thank you so much. So if there's nothing else, I mean, like I said, you guys are really vibing. We could probably talk for a lot longer. I'm conscious of the time, so we will wrap it up here. So thank you both for speaking, and enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.